This spring,
be cool.
Be cool.
I am cool.
You're either a pimp or a limo driver.
We can get into some gangsters.
Everyone is looking.
It's something I've been wanting to do for a long time.
For the next big hit.
Who are all these people trying to kill you?
I'm in the music business now. It could be anybody.
Be cool.
Is that your car?
It's the Cadillac of hybrids.
But what about speed?
If you're important, people will wait.
Welcome into another edition of the Bad Movies Worst Opinions podcast, where we believe that everybody has a favorite bad movie. The only rule of the podcast is that we must watch a movie that's rated below a 6.0 on IMDb. We have welcomed back my dear friend Joshua Nickens onto the show today. You didn't pick this movie, but you inspired me to pick this movie. I remember you had, you know, back in the day, that big DVD book. You had Be Cool on DVD, and I never saw it until just yesterday.
I still have that book. It's sitting underneath my bed, and every now and then I'll get out a movie and watch it. I think that's where I pulled this from.
So Be Cool is the movie we are doing today. It is a 5.6 on IMDb at a 73,000 votes. The plot of Be Cool: disenchanted with the movie industry, Chili Palmer tries the music industry, meeting and romancing a widow of a music executive along the way. I watched this movie on Tubi, but this movie is available in a lot of different places. This movie's on Freevee, Pluto TV, Prime Video. You watch it on DVD. If you have a smart television, you have free access to watch Be Cool.
Yeah, there's no reason for you to not watch this movie if you have it available to you as much as it is now.
The release date for this movie, March 4th of 2005, has a runtime of 120 minutes. The budget was somewhere between $53 and $75 million, which, that's a wild number.
That's insane, but they had to pay all the cameos and stuff, right?
But $53 to $75, that's not a budget. It's not a budget at all. I don't know that's a suggestion. That is not a budget.
Keep it around 50 to 75 million and we'll be good.
The box office for this, it made $95.8 million at the box office. You are absolutely going to love this 2000s box office. So this movie came out on March 4th of 2005. Here's the box office. The Pacifier, number one at $30 million. Be Cool came in number two at 23.4. Hitch was number three that weekend with $12 million. Diary of a Mad Black Woman was number four with $11 million, and Million Dollar Baby was number five in the box office that week with $8 million. That's a good 2000s box office. You got a little bit of everything. You got a little Will Smith. You got a little Vin Diesel, some Tyler Perry. Got a movie that won Best Picture at the Oscars, Million Dollar Baby. This is a good 2000s box.
Be Cool is literally the only movie that you mentioned that I actually watched.
You never seen Hitch?
I watched Hitch.
Okay. Well, you need to go watch Diary of a Mad Black Woman tonight. That's a classic.
I don't want to watch Diary of a Mad
Black Woman. Tyler Perry only got about three good movies. That's one of the three.
And I watched two of them. Why Did I Get Married and Why Did I Get Married 2? Like, those are the only two I'm interested in. After that, I don't want it.
Well, you know what, man? There's other ones. You know what this podcast will get you to do before it's all over?
Watching these movies.
We'll get you to watch another Tyler Perry movie, man. We'll get you to watch another Tyler Perry movie. This was my biggest takeaway in my first time watching Be Cool. It felt like a Tarantino movie. Maybe I feel that way because John Travolta is the lead character in this movie, and we'll get to the cast because the cast for this movie is incredible. One of the best casts in a movie I can remember.
Hey, you have to remember, Tarantino loved using Uma Thurman. Like, he always has his people. It's Uma Thurman, Samuel Jackson, and it's like a couple other people he like always has in all his movies. So I can understand where you get that feeling from.
And just the way that the story was told, the way that I feel like the movie kind of transitioned from scene to scene, it just felt very Tarantino. They also use the N-word in here, which felt kind of out of place over the course of the movie.
It's more or less the F-word that they was dropping in here more.
It felt like this movie was trying to be, it was certainly Tarantino inspired, is maybe a good way of putting it.
Very much so, yeah.
All right, so let's get through the cast, because the cast for this is, it's incredible.
Extensive.
John Travolta is Chili Palmer. He's the main character. Uma Thurman is Edie Athens. Vince Vaughn is Raj Lowenthal. Cedric the Entertainer is in this movie. Sin LaSalle. Quick complaint about this movie with Cedric the Entertainer.
Okay.
I would have actually used a real producer in this movie. And I think the movie is a little bit better. Because when they had to do the singer, like, you got to convince me that Linda Moon is worth all of this. Okay. You pick Christina Milian, beautiful woman. She can sing a little bit. She's got great charisma, great stage presence. You gave me a real musician during that time.
She has an actual album.
When they had the scene where later in the movie, Cedric's producing music, A, that beat wasn't really that hard the way they was acting to it. And that's just not how I think a producer would be. Now, I know this might be taboo to say. You know who actually would have played this role really well? Puff. Puff would have been good as Cedric the Entertainer's character.
Well, here's the thing, though. The actual production part is only, what, a five-minute scene?
But just the whole thing, like, we've seen Cedric enough. You're not going to convince me that Cedric was shaking people down. Like, the whole thing is Cedric is this big music producer and you owe him money. He never really gets mad or anything. He never really has that menacing. There's one time he has on a jersey, but he has on, like, a collared shirt underneath. Like, bro, are you about to go hoop? You going to happy hour? What you about to do?
But that shows the contrast of what John Travolta was talking about when he read him in the office. He's like, you throw on the jersey, but you got an NBA. So the NBA is the collar, but, you know, the street gangster is the tall jersey.
Okay, maybe we don't pick Puff. I understand now that's problematic, but you agree Puff would have done a great
Puff
job with
been
this,
good because I think he probably would have, you know, he's actually been doing stuff like this anyway, so he probably would have had the charisma to actually do the non-production scenes. I actually can't think of anybody else that could do it, because
I'll give you another one, non-problematic person, Jermaine Dupri. That's what I was thinking when I did it,
allegedly.
Yeah, Jermaine Dupri, I think, would have been pretty good in this sense. Okay. Certainly has a good charisma. He's acted in a couple of different movies. You got the Atlanta
but
artist right next to him.
Stature-wise, he's too small. Okay, like, I understand you got the WMDs doing the heavy work, but you still gotta have some stature on you. That wouldn't have worked.
Cedric the Entertainer, he was Sin LaSalle. Andre Benjamin was Dabu. He might have been the funniest person in the movie.
Absolutely.
Andre 3000 was really funny in this. Christina Milian, she's Linda Moon. The Rock is in this movie. Danny DeVito is in this movie. James Wood is also in this movie. He's Tommy Athens. He's the doctor from John Q in My World. Like, I remember you. You was denying people health care. I don't like him. Ariana Keble is in it. This movie just has... This is one of the more impressive cast for a movie that we've done on this podcast. This is an incredible cast.
I feel like this movie is probably one of them. You remember probably in the later 2000s, they started doing these massive just ensemble movies that were terrible. Like, they just started having like Valentine's Day or... Like,
yeah, okay.
I feel like this is kind of like one of the lead-offs to that, where they just start cramming as many people as you could think of into a movie.
Yeah, I feel like they make this movie, like, once a year in Hollywood. Amsterdam is another movie like that. Like, they just try to, like, load you up. Like, the movie's kind of light on story, mm-hmm. but they really sell you with how many different people are in the movie.
Well, Hugh Jackman's in here. I'll check it out.
Be Cool begins with Chili Palmer and the doctor from John Q riding around, and the former doc is thinking about leaving the movie business and getting into music. After their conversation, some Russian mobster pulls up for a midday 187 on the doctor from John Q, but the shooter's accuracy is like a third-string quarterback in bad weather. But the mobster eventually hits the target, but he doesn't have enough bullets left for Travolta. I do think there's the underlining theme of the movie of being cool. And the first 2.5 minutes really set you up. No one responds in a drive-by the way that John Travolta did. The guy comes out. He's holding a pistol to him. He casually grabs his cigarette, just never worried about the situation. They only say be cool one time in the whole movie, but you could feel over the course of the movie, the theme was be cool.
But I think that's also supposed to allude to kind of what he did in the movie industry too. Like, yeah, he's a producer, but he's probably in on some shady stuff back there too. So I think that whole thing was supposed to show that he doesn't rattle easy and he sees all this stuff all the time. But you know who the best actor in this whole scene is? The toupee.
It did just fly up out of nowhere.
That boy was flapping everywhere.
Who? All right, let me ask you this. This is a sports related question, but I kind of related to this. The guy was a terrible shooter. Accuracy was okay. I was gonna ask who's that quarterback? You like, man, we ain't got no chance to win,
bro. Jamarcus Russell.
Nathan Peterman. I don't know why we saw as many Nathan Peterman starts as we saw.
I forgot
Nathan Peterman was he was terrible. So it's time for a night out on the town, and we meet Christina Milian, a.k.a. Linda Moon, who performs, and she's great. She wants out of her record deal. We learn about her contract situation, and we meet her music pimp, Vince Vaughn, who is having a bit of an identity crisis. Chili confronts her music pimp and bodyguard, who's played by The Rock, and wants to get her out of the deal. And the bodyguard played by The Rock, he gets an audition out of the deal as well. What's your thoughts on Vince Vaughn's character?
I was actually going to ask you that question because I know Vince Vaughn is in some of your favorite all-time
You know,
favorite
I love
movies.
Vince Vaughn. I didn't like this Vince Vaughn. I hate, maybe this is just the personal, I hate when they try to make white people act black in movies and their actions are always so exaggerated.
It's way too over the top.
Way over the top. Like, you could have had them act black in a way that's like, oh, okay, that's like realistic but still funny in a way. This, he felt like he was Malibu's most wanted.
I'm gonna make the same comparison.
It was so bad. Like, there was some funny lines from Vince Vaughn, because he's just really funny. That scene where they're in the diner and he's talking to Joe Loop, like, the core of Vince Vaughn is still here, but the character they had him acting was just so over the top goofy.
It was hard to kind of sit through. Yeah, like you say, he had his funny moments, but it was rough.
So Chili goes to check on the former doctor's widow, played by Uma Thurman, Edie, at her place, and he offers to help her with the record label. Chili is also there to push his new act, Linda Moon, and while at the house, we learn that Tommy had a run-in with the assassin earlier at the record label. Raj runs to the label to tell about the issue at the club where Chili took their lead singer, Linda Moon, who is a part of a girl group. They need to bring in some muscle, so they call in Joe Loop. We are then introduced to Cedric the Entertainer, who appears to be a kind of no-nonsense individual. Every time Andre 3000 was on the screen, he has the best scenes and really takes them over. Whether it's with slurping the noodles, whether it's from I Just Want to Shoot People. Like, he even made me laugh when they was laying down later in the movie and he just couldn't get comfortable. Like, I don't know what it is. Like, some people just, like, jump off the screen.
Right.
Every movie he's been in, you know I love Four Brothers. Andre 3000 is just a very, very good actor.
Yeah, I think he doesn't get a whole lot of credit as far as his acting. Because whenever he does do something, he's very good. Like, him and Mos Def are like that. Like, they do really well in movies.
They pulled up in them big Hummers. It kind of looked like the H to the Izzo video is what it looked like. I lit like their crew. Their crew was funny.
Man, they had the spinning rims, bro. You remember when that was a thing?
Heck yeah. Then the joke when they was like, what kind of gas mileage you get with that thing? 10?
Nine.
He said nine. I was dying. That was funny. So Chili has a meeting set up between Tommy's widow, Edie, and Linda so she can finally hear her voice. Well, Linda kills the audition. She's on her way. Aerosmith is coming into town to do a show at Staples, and Chili wants a meeting with Steven Tyler to help launch Linda's career. This is what we were talking about at the very beginning. You had to convince me that all this trouble you were going through, that her talent was worth it, right? You had to convince me. And you weren't going to be able to do that with the regular actor, actress. You had to get somebody who could actually sing.
Right.
That's why, like, if you were going to do some of the music business stuff, you kind of had to meet Cedric the Entertainer's character. It would have been better served if they had somebody that, like, oh, that's a believable person in that role.
Right.
I thought Cedric's character was kind of goofy. And maybe it's just coming off the heels of we just watched Head of State, so I saw, like, one of the other kings of comedy. Right. And I'm like, man, Bernie was so much funnier than all of y'all.
Yeah, but Bernie's just a whole nother beast, man.
Bernie couldn't have played this character, though, not for what I think this character needed. Chili pulls up to his house to see a man shot to death with two in the back. The man was there to kill him, but he ends up dead himself. Something fishy is going on. Raj is at the diner meeting with Joe Loop, who was supposed to hit Chili, but he killed the wrong guy. But that doesn't matter because he needs another $5,000 to do the job right. Wait, you're telling me I paid you to go kill A. You killed B. And now you telling me I owe you more money because you killed the wrong individual?
He didn't even kill B, bro. He killed F.
He killed somebody very unrelated to the shenanigans.
But here's my problem with this scene. And it's kind of a whole thing the movie's been doing the whole time. It kind of steps in and out of being meta, if that makes sense. Because in the beginning where they mention the PG-13 thing and dropping the F-bomb and then he does it for the movie. Or they talk about what the plot of Chili's next movie could be and that ends up being the entire movie itself in a way. About it being NTL Records and Linda Moon becoming a singer. Chili and Edie, so Uma and John, were the only people that talked about Aerosmith for about 60% of the movie. Why was Steven Tyler on the TV when he came in? So it's not like it. Usually they'll do something like that to kind of allude to something. Like, hey, they were talking about this, and oh, look, Steven Tyler's on the TV. No one else had that conversation. Why is this video playing?
What I was thinking the whole time is, the spin at the end is going to be that we have been watching a movie inside the movie, that he never actually left. We were watching the movie that he was producing. Like, that was kind of what I thought. That's kind of interesting. I soon realized that wasn't going to be the case. Maybe I thought this because I'm currently rewatching Sopranos. So it always blurs the line between, is that person real or is this a figment of Tony's imagination? I was starting to think that as I was watching this, like, especially in the beginning, because you're right, like that opening scene, they kind of describe what the plot of the movie is going to be.
Exactly.
Yeah, so you're kind of thinking that, oh, this is like some Inception kind of shit where it's going to be a movie inside a movie that we're watching.
That's what I would have thought. And I wouldn't have been mad if they said cut at the end right after they got done dancing on stage. And then you cut to the side and Chili's sitting in the director's chair or something. And old boy that got shot in the beginning is standing right there behind him. Like, I wouldn't have been mad at that. It'd have been silly, but I don't know. I mean, it seemed like they were playing around with that the whole time and they just decided to, all right, well, no, this really happened.
We are at the studio and Linda is recording her first single. The single wasn't really hitting.
No.
It wasn't really hitting. She can sing, mm-hmm. but that's what I want your first single to be. It wasn't no kind of get up. It wasn't really a pop tune. It was just a ballad.
That's a B-side ballad.
Yeah,
bro.
Yeah.
And that's what the dude said. She ain't had no sound.
Yeah, like that. Yeah, that they could have picked a, you know, dip it low, a little something with a little umph to it. Song didn't have no umph to it. She's doing her thing, but the money isn't right, and her label's contract is all fucked up. Sin LaSaw and the WMD crew pull up to the label like Ice Cube in 91, demanding the $300,000 they're owed from the record label, NTL. Well, the label is broke, insufficient funds. Raj almost catches the people elbow from his bodyguard, Elliot, who still hasn't gotten the call back from Chili about his acting career.
I got two things. First off, back when Linda Moon pulled up at the gym for her to be heard, why is it that 2000s movies love having somebody pull up in the just most absolute beater they can to show that they're the, down and out?
The come up, yeah.
Yeah. Like the fender got to fall off, it's brown, it barely gets there. Why do they insist on doing that?
I'm going to tell you right now that Christina Milian, she's been too fine to work at Dairy Queen. I'm telling you that right now. You would have worked. That girl wouldn't have worked at Dairy Queen. That girl in Los Angeles, she'd have worked at a boutique or something. She'd have worked at a mall. Nah, she could have still been broke. She just wouldn't have been working at Dairy Queen.
Bro, she was at Dairy Queen with Scott Lang. She was there with Ant-Man, bro.
Nah, that's not where she would have been. She'd have been at Abercrombie during that time. She'd have been working at the Buckle. That girl, with the way she looked, she'd have worked at the mall somewhere.
Then the second thing is, this movie made me miss my Lincoln, bro.
Oh, my goodness.
I miss my town car.
Yeah, because you had that beater car like she pulled up in.
Nah, I had the Lincoln that Raji had.
Nah, you had that little car that Christina Milian pulled up in, dipping it low.
It. You know I had a town car.
Dipping it low. I understand that it was a 2000s comedy, and people used to say this. Man, when they use homophobic slurs in this movie, they just always just the needle drop, like, the whole running joke about The Rock's character is that he's gay. It's just these parts of these comedies and these movies always age the worst to me. And it's something that we have just completely removed as a vehicle for humor in these movies.
I think it was unnecessary. Like, it didn't really add too much to it. I mean, I think that the scene where he had his music video playing, I think that was kind of funny. And then, you know, him doing the monologue. Like, I can maybe see them throwing that in as the exaggeration, but just them disrespecting him the whole time, like, that was unnecessary, and it didn't add anything.
Yeah, where he could have still just been that character without all of the insults for it. It is kind of crazy, because I would say maybe, like, 4 or 5 years later, they just would have called him metrosexual. Like,
right.
Acting that way as a man would have been just more accepted a little bit later in these kind of movies, but certainly not in the early to mid-2000s. Now, they was calling you gay in these movies if you acted like that.
And the crazy thing is, he was doing the subtle mannerisms where it would have let you know without them having to go just full F-bomb on him every three scenes.
I did like the fact that they played on the fact of who he was in real life, that he would just do the people's eyebrow and that was like his thing.
Right.
That was pretty funny. Like, yeah, it was. There was like a lot of like real subtleties in this movie that now going back, like not seeing it when it happened, but now seeing it in, you know, in present day was like, oh yeah, I remember that person. I remember that person. Oh yeah, The Rock. Yeah, no, it was good.
But I feel like this was at the time where he wasn't taking himself too seriously, and you know, it was actually fun seeing him in the movie like this. The Scorpion King, the Mummy 2, stuff like his early stuff. Gridiron Gang, before he hit the roids and got gigantic, it was like, I can't lose to anybody now.
Yeah, there's so many movies now that like you go back and you watch The Rock's career, there's no way he would agree to do that movie now. Like, oh, you know, and like
no question.
And he's an A-list actor and he's only playing roles in a certain lane. Like he's doing San Andreas or doing one of those kind of movies. Like he would never not agree to do this role now.
No, he's not doing this. He probably doesn't do the rundown where he gets kicked around like he did for a little bit. Like
the rundown's good. I like the rundown.
I love the rundown.
Yeah, I love the rundown.
Dude, I love the rundown. Walk in, The Rock, Sean William Scott. That's a great movie.
That was when the time where they were like, oh, we got this emerging superstar, but we got to put him with somebody known funny and see if it worked. That little buddy cop feeling, that always works in these movies. Chili pulls up at Nick Carr's house to negotiate how to get out of Linda's deal. Raj meets Joe Loop for an exchange of the $5,000, but Loop's not going to be needing that money because he gets beaten to death by Elliot's brand new and shiny back. Uma Thurman and John Travolta hit up a Black Eyed Peas concert and they share a dance together and continue how to discuss how to get Linda with Aerosmith and Steven Tyler. It's time to go pay the Russians a visit and Chili walks into their spot about their failed hit on him at his house. Meanwhile, Elliot is off to go get a pair of new threads and in the process, he spots Chili having a delightful conversation with law enforcement about the beatdown of Joe Loop. This was maybe The Rock's funniest scene to me when he's at the clothing store and he's spinning around and acting funny in the mirror. The Rock's just—he's really, really good.
And the cowboy there is just looking at him crazy.
So confused.
I'm so shocked with the extensive cast that they already have. They couldn't have got Sam Elliott to stand there and be the one looking at him like that. Like that'd have been hilarious. Also, I think this previous scene with them going to the Black Eyed Peas concert is kind of why you think this feels like a Tarantino movie, because that scene of Uma and John dancing is lifted right out of Pulp Fiction. Like, they had a whole dance contest where they did the twist in Pulp Fiction. Like, they were at a bar, like, sitting in a booth, almost the exact same setup, only they were sitting on opposite sides. And they get up and, you know, basically just start dancing. It's almost homage to it, just, you know, Pulp Fiction's a clearly superior movie.
Is there any, I guess, post kind of boy bands 2000s group to better have in this movie than the Black Eyed Peas? Because, like, you got to remember, this is, like, after NSYNC and Backstreet Boys and kind of that era of music, and then we still have groups. I don't know if you could get a better pick than the Black Eyed Peas. That's held up really well. Oh, we're going to see the Black Eyed Peas. Well, yeah, that makes sense in 2004, 2005.
Yeah, I mean, Black Eyed Peas was a staple at that
time. Heck yeah!
So, yeah. Can you tell me what Fergie was doing, though? When they cut to her dancing, I was so confused.
She was
confused.
Doing the dip it low. That's what she was doing.
Man, she was doing Tai Chi up there. Stop
she was
it.
Doing the dip it low. I actually was thinking while I was watching this, I was like, damn, where did Fergie go? We ain't seen Fergie. Because a lot of them stars from them kind of pop up. Like, you know, Katy Perry's a little bit later, but Katy Perry's still around. Like, a lot of those mid-2000s people are still around. When's the last time you seen what Fergie looks like? She ain't sang since the All-Star game.
Yeah, I remember she had the Duchess solo album and then, you know, Fergalicious and all that. And whatever that other song was that was like that Little Richard sample. Can't help it.
Yeah.
Can't help it. Like, other than that,
Fergie got about four or five hits, for real. She got about four or five hits. Glamorous, London Bridge, Big Girls Don't Cry. Fergie had a...
London Bridge. Okay.
Fergie had a great career with them. Boom, boom, boom. Yeah. And she also had a good solo career, man. Yeah. Shout out to Fergie, man. Let's give Fergie a little love. Let's give Fergie a little love on the pod.
But you're right. After she bombed doing the national anthem and you got them memes of Draymond Green and Steph Curry laughing at her, she's been gone.
Bro, we ain't seen Fergie working about 4 years. We ain't seen her since the vaccine came out. I forgot what she looked like. So, well, Steven Tyler remembers Edie. They catch up at a Lakers-Kings game. Another just great mid-2000s activity. Little Lakers-Kings, little Peja Stojakovic, Mike Bibby on the court, you Doug Christie.
You seen Kobe posted up for a second? R.I.P. Yeah. Kobe?
Yeah, I was sitting there like, oh, I remember these guys. I used to love the Sacramento Kings during that time. So they catch up at a Lakers-Kings game with some incredible seats. Elliot meets up with the guys to relay what he saw earlier with Chili when he was talking to the police, and they're starting to put together what's going on. Back at Staples Center, Steven Tyler finally gets to hear Linda Moon's demo, and he's impressed. He's going to consider the idea of doing a duet. We love it when a plan comes together. You want to know what real famous is? They sit courtside. I mean, incredible seats, right?
Jack Nicholson seats.
Incredible seats. And then the next time we see him at Staples Center, there ain't nobody else in the venue, and they have us in a private skybox listening to music.
That's a different level of money, bro.
100%.
Just different level of money.
100%. Well,
you know what's hilarious to me? She went there a whole time thinking, oh, there's no way he's going to remember me. Not only did he recognize her right off, he's talking about how him and the fellas were still talking about what she put in their laundry. Like, that's such an odd thing to remember. What did you put in our clothes? Lavender water. Oh, the guys still talk about how fresh the socks smell. Like, bro, just get some fabric.
You're sick. And we had to do a rock star power ranking. Is Steven Tyler number one on the list? I don't know if anybody envisions, like, oh, what I think a rock star looks like, they look like Steven Tyler.
Him and Mick Jagger.
Yeah, golly. I was sitting there, man. Who doesn't love Steven Tyler?
It's been the longest time to realize they were different people.
You know what? That's a two Americas thing right there. Because there's people listening to this like, whoa, that's crazy.
That wasn't really my genre of music. So, you know, my exposure to Aerosmith before I really started just expanding what I listened to musically, don't want to miss a thing. Because they played the mess out of that video when Armageddon.
Yeah.
When that movie was out, they played that to death. And that was my experience with Aerosmith. And Mick, not Steven Tyler, but you know, I would see Mick Jagger around, I think, for with Michael Jackson, State of Shock, that song that they did way back. And I'm like, I couldn't tell the difference until, like I said, I started getting out, listening a little bit more, and then I seen them, like, oh, these are clearly two different people.
I remember Steven Tyler. He was a judge on American Idol. That's how I remember him. And I remember Sing for the Moment.
It's funny they bring it up. I actually do like Dream On. Like, I like that song.
Yeah, incredible song. Elliot breaks into Edie's house and tries to go whoops upside Chili's head, but he strikes out at the plate. Elliot's still mad about not getting his shot at his big break. Linda hasn't shown up for a few days, so Edie calls her phone, but it would appear that she's in the clutches of Raj and that label. The bad guys have Linda again and are pressing her about performing for them under their label. Chili swoops in to confront the old label head, Nick, and we're still trying to get her out of her contract. We spent a lot of time trying to get her out of this record deal. Why didn't you just buy her out of it? Why did you have some negotiation moving forward of, hey, if this thing works, we see it all the time. You know how many people are signed to multiple labels?
I don't think the money would have worked out, though. Like, everybody was so big on just having her talent and doing something else with it. I just don't think that would have worked. So they ain't even bother talking about it. What I think is hilarious is them using that Russian shot with the pickup ticket. It was almost like some Ocean's 11 level double crossing that they were trying to do using that contract. Not only that, but the contract just seemed like whatever was in the briefcase in Pulp Fiction. Like, you never actually saw it, but they just kept talking about it.
Yeah, it was this. That's what I'm saying. There were so many Tarantino things, because that's what the pawn shop thing kind of felt to me. Like, they kept having this ticket and going back, and you had to wonder what you were going to get with the ticket. It eventually pays itself at the end. But yeah, that's another kind of Tarantino. So the bad guys have Linda again, and they're pressing her to get her perform under the label. Chili swoops in. We're still trying to get her out of her deal. They're trying to set him up. Speaking of a setup, that's what Chili and Elliot are trying to do with Nick by trying to sick WMD and sin on them. The police are stopping by to Edie's to continue their investigation, and now Edie gives them a pawn ticket that was handed to Chili earlier in the movie. Everybody's has a beef. Raj is being hung outside upside down like Vanilla Ice. Sin is being insulted. The Russian gets killed. There's a lot going on. So Linda finally gets her shot, and she is on stage performing with Aerosmith, and she's amazing. Her and Steven Tyler do a little bit of a duet. Back at Edie's house is a bit of a powwow. Chili, Sin, the WMD crew, they bond over Linda Moon, and Sin agrees to produce her next single. That single wasn't hidden for me, bruh. They was talking about the blues guitar, and they was playing it.
Right.
That beat wasn't really slapping for me, man.
It was kind of mid.
The beat wasn't slapping. This is what we were talking about to see earlier with Andre 3000 when he was just trying to lay down and he couldn't get comfortable. But he was funny, man.
Holding the teacup with the pistol was hilarious too. Like, I know they ran that in the trailer, but it was still funny even seeing it in its entirety in the movie. Like, yeah, you're right. Dude stole that scene just trying to get comfortable and sip a little tea.
Linda's career is taking off. It's time to shoot the music video. Meanwhile, Nick Carr, he plans his own hit out on Chili and Edie. Nick has Edie held hostage so he can get back the rights to Linda's contract, and Nick hands him a pawn ticket. Elliot finally learns about Raj. Raj been holding him down the whole time. He had deleted his message that Chili sent for him earlier in the movie to set him up an audition at 3:00. Well, it's a setup. The pawn ticket is the murder weapon that was used to kill Joe Loop earlier in the film. The cops have busted the whole thing. The movie finally ends at the VMAs where Linda performs. She wins an award. She thanks Chili. We also see that The Rock becomes the famous actor that he always wanted to be, and that is the end of Be Cool.
Because this feels like, you said it enough, and I just thought about this a couple of minutes ago. This feels like if Vincent Vega in Pulp Fiction, instead of getting killed, decides to move to L.A. and become a movie producer and then becomes a music producer. And then Uma Thurman, who's also in Pulp Fiction, you know, leaves Ving Rhames' character, also moves to L.A. and marries a music tycoon.
Rotten Tomatoes! This movie has a 30% on Rotten Tomatoes out of 171 reviews with an average rating of 4.6. The site's critical consensus reads, Be Cool is tepid, square, and lukewarm. As a parody of the music business, it has two left feet. Roger Ebert, quote, a classic species of bore, a self-referential film with no self to refer to. One character after another, one scene after another, one cute dialogue after another refers to another movie, a similar character, a contrasting image, or whatever. Let me read this to you. This is from the director, F. Gary Gray, who's actually done a lot of really good movies in his day.
Exactly.
Quote, with Be Cool, I made some assumptions in thinking that the movie was going to work. I just make a successful PG-13 movie like Italian Job. And when I walked into Be Cool, it was rated R. Then I was told with last minute pre-production, well, you have to make this PG-13. I should have just walked out of the film. He then kind of goes on. I don't know if the movie is that much better if this movie is rated R as opposed to PG-13. Maybe it's a little bit edgier and darker, but I don't know if that's what saves this movie and kind of puts it over the top.
I don't think it does. What does the R rating give you that would have made this movie better?
Cursing. I mean, that's all. I mean, you're not getting any nudity in this movie that you think enhances the story. The right. Only thing you would think is there's more cursing in it. I just don't know.
That's just the F-bomb, the F-bomb at that point.
Yeah, I just don't know if that is what saves this movie. I do agree a little bit with Roger Ebert. It was kind of hard for me because, like, I don't love Tarantino movies in the way that everybody else does, kind of because of the vehicle of the storytelling. Like, I never really felt at times that the story was kind of cohesive, and I do kind of agree with this. It would just go from these characters, then this scene, and it didn't flow in a way that I really like my movies to flow. So that was like one of the critiques that I had about this. But I understand Tarantino movies are obviously very popular, and like that film mechanism works for so many people.
Well, I love Tarantino movies, but see, with this movie trying to either pay homage or kind of lift some things from it to give it that same feel, Tarantino's movies, even ridiculous over-the-top gore aside, have real good scenes of dialogue. Even if the dialogue's ridiculous, it just makes you get engaged with who's on the scene. I mean, Sam Jackson and John Travolta had a whole conversation about Quarter Pounders being called Royale with Cheese over in Across the Pond. And it was interesting. And most of Tarantino's movies are like that. Hateful Eight has great dialogue scenes. Django, of course. Like, they all have where people can just sit down and talk. It ain't a whole lot of action, but they can sit down and talk. They can either talk about what drives the plot. They can talk about stuff that doesn't drive the plot. But it's written in a way where it's super interesting. And this movie just doesn't have that.
I think this movie tries to throw more famous cameos and characters at the expense sometimes of developing a more linear story. Like, the movie kind of hits you with, it's kind of like Entourage in a way.
Right.
It just kind of hits you with famous person after famous person, and that's kind of part of the story is, oh, wait, look who's in this movie. Steven Tyler is in this movie. Danny DeVito is in this movie. Like, we spent so much kind of being kind of oohed and awed by the star power of the movie, and I think the movie, we always kind of say on this podcast, usually in bad movies, it is a film that really grasps, like, what it is and really doesn't hone in, that it tries to have five or seven stories, where if you did two or three really well, you would have got to the core of something. That's what I feel like is this movie's biggest problem.
And they had Danny DeVito in there just to kind of keep the running gag of the car, the gas mileage joke going. And I think another thing that bad movies do is that they reference much better movies a lot more, whether better movies actually on TV within the movie, or they take scenes from the movie, or a lot of references to it, name it by name. Like, I think a lot of bad movies do that a lot. Like, very seldom do good movies reference other good movies, or worse movies, for that matter.
So let's start here. What do you think this movie got right? You own this movie. It's in your DVD collection. What made you buy Be Cool?
I feel like Stacks was a big part of wanting to watch that movie again. Like, I really enjoyed his character, Dabu. It was funny. I thought Cedric was cool. And then, you know, I guess it's just the whole nostalgia with those early 2000s movies. Like, I went to go see it with my mom, you know, we thought it was funny. And, you know, you're not thinking about this movie in the lens of, one, critiquing it, because that's just not where I was at the time in 2005. I mean, what, we were juniors in high school? Yeah, it's just a nostalgia thing. Like, I thought, but it's clearly not a good movie watching it now with, you know, older and analyzing the little nitpicks in between scenes and stuff. It's a poor quality movie for sure.
I think the cast, if you've never seen this movie, it's worth it just to kind of see the cast and the cameos and to kind of give yourself that feel. I do think this movie was great for the DVD era. I do think it was great for a movie to watch that if it was on VH1, you'd probably stop and watch it for a little bit. What this movie got wrong is I just don't think the story's super linear in this movie. And that, to me, kind of stops it. And we talked about it. I think the Cedric the Entertainer's character is miscast. That's what I think this movie gets wrong. What did this movie get wrong?
I think a lot of it revolves around just the way the story was presented. Because, like I said, it was trying to be meta, but then comedic, but kind of serious. And then, yeah, it was too much going on with some of the characters being in and out, trying to see how many faces you can cram on the screen. And of course, just the over-reliance on the slurs for the jokes. Like, yeah, you could do that every now and then to kind of help somewhere. Because, like I said, clearly Tarantino does it. And some people have a problem with it. But in the context in a lot of his movies, it does work. But I think here it was over-relied on. And, you know, especially for comedy, it just doesn't work.
This movie is rated 5.6 on IMDb. Is that too much, too little, or just right for Be Cool?
I would probably put it closer to a 5. Maybe like a 5.1, 5.2 maybe.
I'm a little surprised that you think this movie's too highly rated. I thought you would have been on the other side. Coming into it, I would have thought that you were on the other side.
Nah, I mean, as much as I like Dabu and you know, I thought The Rock's subtlety as a character compared to how he does now is cool, but I mean, I don't know, this movie kind of falls apart.
Yeah, I actually, as I was watching it, I was thinking, wow, I'm shocked this movie is rated below a 5.6. Like, I was thinking that in probably the first 30 minutes of the movie. As the movie kept going on, I was like, oh, okay, I'm starting to get it more and more. If I probably had to settle in on a score, I'd probably settle in at 5.4. I feel like that's about right for this movie.
Yeah.
5.6 feels a little bit too high that I'd knock it a little bit. 5.4 to me feels like the correct range for Be Cool. I did enjoy this movie. I would recommend this movie to people and tell you to check it out and tell you to watch it, but I don't know if this is a movie that I would go back and rewatch a whole lot, but It was a fine watch. I'm happy we reviewed this movie for the podcast.
Yeah, I feel like every now and then, just to kind of see what was going on for the nostalgia back in 2005, it's fine, but it's definitely not I have to watch Be Cool. Because really, it sat in my case for all this time until you was like, hey, you want to do Be Cool? And I was like, hey, I'll pop Be Cool in just to refresh. And I was like, ooh.
This was another episode of the Bad Movies Worst Opinions podcast. Be sure to like, subscribe, do all the things that podcasters ask you to do. And remember, everybody has a favorite bad movie. There's only one rule. The movie must be rated below a 6.0 on IMDb. We finally are doing the Exit Wounds review. We were supposed to do it in September, but we kept having to move things around. And then October came, so we had scary movies in the middle. But I promise you, next week we are doing Exit Wounds, Steven Seagal, DMX, another movie I've never seen before. So I'm very excited to do it.
Oh, my mom loves Steven Seagal movies. So, yeah, I'm pretty sure y'all going to have a good one.
She's got a favorite bad movie. Everybody does. Keep it right here.